Hey, Trisha.
Are we set?
Are we set?
Yep. Ready to go?
Okay. We'll call the Desert Community Energy Board meeting of February 23rd, 2021 to order. Can we get a roll call, please?
Thank you, Chair. Cathedral City?
Here, Rita Lamb.
Palm Desert?
Present.
Palm Springs?
Here.
All are present and we have a quorum.
Great, thank you very much. Since we have a couple items that we may have public comment on, we'll take them at the time of each item so we can be fresh on any of those comments when they come up. So we'll go next to board member director comments. So either of the board members have any comments, anything they'd like to share?
No comments at this time, thank you.
Okay, great, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to let the board and members know we do have a closed session item at the end of the agenda, and you will be receiving a separate email link to that closed session item once this meeting is underway. So at the time when we're ready for the closed session, you will depart from this Zoom call and log on to that new link for the closed session item.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Next item is the consent calendar. We have two items. One is to approve the minutes from our board meeting of December 21st, 2020. And the second is to authorize the updating of the bank signature card to reflect changes in Director of Finance Administration. Are there any questions or would anyone like to pull one of those items for separate discussion and vote?
I'll move approval.
Okay. I second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes, okay, motions. Consent calendar carries, thank you very much. Our next is discussion action items. And the first is the DCE long-term renewable energy procurement with the Deer Creek Solar and Storage Project. And I believe we do have one public comment on that item, at least. Is that correct, Ms. Norris?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we had a public comment from David Friedman. Right.
Are you on, David?
There we go. Here he comes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, board members. As noted, I'm David Friedman. As you know, I chair the DC Community Advisory Committee and speaking on agenda item 6A, the power purchase agreement with Deer Creek Solar. Together with CAC member Noel Glaughran, I had the honor this past summer of being part of the RFO review team. Along with DC staff and TEA, our focus as CAC members was economic impacts and benefits to the local community. The particular benefit of the Deer Creek project is its 4-hour battery energy storage system. As noted in the staff report, the battery energy storage component of the project will help with grid reliability. As we saw from the power shutoff this past summer here in California and last week in Texas, improving grid reliability is critical, especially in a community with many residents who need electricity to power their medical devices, as well as a tourism-based economy. I urge you to approve the proposed PPA. Thank you for your consideration. I'll have a brief public comment on item 7D when that matter comes up. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments on item 6A, which is a long-term energy procurement? You can raise your hand if you have a public comment or *9 if you're on your phone.
Mr. Chair, I see no hands raised for public comment.
Okay, so thank you. And thank you, Mr. Friedman, for your work on this. So we'll turn it over to Jacqueline Haar from the Energy Authority and Mark Rostafin from Vesper Energy is also on with us. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
All right. So I'll be presenting the materials associated with the PPA that's in front of you. You know, there's, as always, a fair amount of technical language that I can tend to fall into. So please feel free to stop me at any time if you have questions, or we can take questions from the board at the end of the presentation as well. Next slide, please. So the project before you is a solar plus storage facility. The developer is Vesper Energy. Mark, who's on screen right now and can speak after I finish with the presentation materials, is from Vesper Energy. And he's been the primary commercial counterpart, helping with the negotiation to get us to a finished power purchase agreement that you have in front of you today. The project is Deer Creek Solar One. As the name suggests, it's a solar facility, 50 megawatts in size, paired with a battery energy storage facility on the same plot of land and interconnected electronically to the solar. The battery is also 50 megawatts in size and is 200 megawatt hours, which means that 50 megawatts can discharge for 4 hours at a time, which is sort of the standard metric we use here in California in terms of the amount of generation that you like to see behind a resource in order to ensure it can provide capacity to the California grid. The project is located in Southern California in Tulare County, which is a little north of Riverside, and is expected, thank you, yes, so as you see on the map here, you know, further north than the previous PPAs that you guys have signed that have been in Palm Springs proper. It's a little bit more challenging to site such a large facility within city limits. So this one is in Tulare County on the plot of land that you see above. Can we go back to the previous slide, please? Thank you. The contract start date is expected to begin at the beginning of Q3 2023, so that's July 1, with the potential to begin earlier should construction and interconnection allow for it. The delivery term will be 20 years in length, so as soon as the project reaches operational, commercial operation, it will be in DC's portfolio for 20 years. The one item to note about this project, and we'll get into it in a little bit in a couple more slides, is the bridge project deliveries, which would begin most likely Q2 2021. And those deliveries would continue until the actual project becomes commercially operational. And then finally, the annual energy storage from the solar portion of the of the facility is just under 200 gigawatt hours per year. For the first year, it'll decrease slightly year over year due to the way the solar technology works. The battery storage, of course, doesn't generate any energy itself, but stores the solar energy. All right, can we skip, I guess, two slides now? All right, so what is a solar plus storage facility? These can be interconnected in a variety of different ways and electronically connected as well in a couple of different ways, but primarily the goal of a solar plus storage facility is to have a renewable asset on the grid, providing green energy to the California grid with a storage asset that allows that solar energy to be used at the time that are best suited for the grid and most economically appropriate for DCE. So the way that this project would be operated is the solar would begin to generate as the sun rose. And at some point, rather than having the solar energy go directly onto the grid, the optimization program that your scheduling coordinator, i.e. TEA or another entity would provide, would start having the solar energy go into the battery system and be stored within the battery system. And the goal of that would to be store the battery and the solar energy in the battery system until during that middle part of the day when you already have a lot of solar generating onto the grid and there's less need for energy on the grid. Continue that storage until the battery is filled up, perhaps have a little bit more generation come out of the solar facility in the late afternoon and continue just to go directly to the grid. And then as the sun begins to set, as we get into the early evening or mid evening periods, when the CAISO system peaks, it needs the most energy, there's the highest demand on the grid, begin to discharge that power from the battery system and putting it onto the grid when it's most needed, as well as when, you know, the prices are highest for the energy. And so that's the value that you can get from the battery system. Next slide, please. So there are a lot of technical characteristics of the contract, as the staff report alluded to. Solar plus storage technology is relatively new to California. There's a few in operation now and many more projects slated to become commercially operational within the next 1 to maybe 4 years. There's going to be a large number of solar plus storage facilities entering the CAISO grid. But because it's such a new technology, each contract tends to be a little bit different, unlike the wind PPAs that were brought to you earlier. You know, the market is still sort of figuring out what makes the most sense for each developer and each load serving entity. And so, you know, those contract terms get worked out. And so that's one of the reasons why this PPA is coming to you a little bit later than the other ones, because, you know, we wanted to make sure we got it right for both DCE and for Vesper. So that's to say that there's, you know, a lot in the PPA, a lot of technical items that I'd be glad to discuss with you. There's one, you know, I would say commercially and potentially compliance related issue that I do want to draw your attention to, and that's the bridge product that is being offered as part of this PPA. So as the board is aware, you know, one of the reasons that we are seeking to have a long-term PPA in DCE's portfolio is to meet the long-term compliance requirements mandated by the state of California. And that requires DCE to procure a certain amount of long-term energy in its portfolio and to have that portfolio, you know, meet a certain threshold in compliance period 4, which started this year and will continue until the end of 2024. Essentially, 65% of the renewable energy that DCE needs to purchase needs to come under from a long-term contract. And what that works out to be is about 25% of the total energy that DCE is purchasing needs to come from a long-term contract. This obviously is a challenging constraint for DCE to meet, given that you're a new load serving entity. You know, there's definitely desire, I think, on the part of the board and DCE staff to procure long-term renewables. It's great for the California grid. It makes fiscal sense for the program as well. But, you know, getting a project signed and then operational takes some time. As I noted, the Deer Creek project won't become operational until mid-2023. In order to ensure that, or to help ensure that DCE meets its compliance obligations to have 25% of its energy procured over compliance period 4 coming from long-term renewables, we are using a contract provision that is referred to as the bridge product. Under this bridge product agreement, which is a secondary exhibit to the main PPA, Vesper Energy will be delivering in-state renewable energy from projects within its portfolio to DCE. And the amount delivered will be roughly equal to the amount that we would expect to have generated by the Deer Creek solar component from the project. Price of this bridge product would be very similar to what you would expect to see TEA procuring on the short-term market on DCE's behalf. So it's not really a fiscal concern, but the delivery of this bridge product should allow the PCC1 energy delivered under the contract to be counted towards DCE's long-term compliance obligation. And I'm you know, putting a conditional in there just because while we think this is the best way for DCE to meet its compliance obligation, and this is the direction from DCE's legal team as well, the bridge product structure has not yet been tested from a compliance perspective at the CPUC. This has been an approach that a number of other newer load serving entities have taken to meet this long-term compliance requirement. It's been discussed with CPUC staff. They've, you know, said that sounds interesting. That seems like a reasonable step forward, but they haven't given an official seal of approval that this indeed will be deemed as meeting the long-term compliance requirement. And the reason why that hasn't occurred yet is there has not yet been a compliance period where there was this long-term compliance requirement that needed to occur. So it just hasn't been tested yet from a compliance perspective. That being said, I do believe that it should meet the CPUC's standards, and that is why we are suggesting going ahead with this contracting arrangement. I'll pause here to see if there are just other questions regarding some of the details in the PPA anything that the board would like to bring up or discuss. All right.
Oh, I thank you for explaining all that. I was reading through all the paperwork. Man, there's a lot of a lot of technical. So basically, the bridge agreement is just, it's the piece that fits in until the project becomes operational. Okay.
That's the gist of it. Yeah. Okay. So it'll be deliveries Q2 through Q4 of this year, of 2022, and then into 2023 until the project becomes operational.
Okay. Thank you. You're a very good explainer.
Thank you. All right. Not seeing any immediate questions from the board. We can move on to the next slide. And go ahead, Savvy.
Questions. I used my hand up on my screen,
but I was muted. My apologies.
No, it's okay. I need to do what I do on city council, which is just yell and jump in forcefully. Great presentation. Thank you. I have just a few questions, and if you can give brief responses, I'd appreciate it. Number one, I'm kind of a visual person. Is there a photo of an existing facility similar to this that you can provide to us? I want to see what it looks like.
I don't have one readily available, but I can work to get you one.
Yeah, I didn't expect one. I didn't expect you to screen share immediately, but if you can email us something, I just like to get my arms around and see what it looks like.
Sure.
I think I heard you say this is relatively new technology, the storage pairing with the power delivery. So there's only a few of them. We do not have one in the Coachella Valley, I assume.
Yeah, that's correct. At this time, I don't believe there's any operational in Coachella Valley.
Is there, and I don't know if this is for you or for staff, but is there anything in the pipeline? Because, we were at a very exciting kind of ribbon cutting event in Palm Springs, and it's so fulfilling to see a local project that creates hundreds of temporary construction jobs. And then I think it was between 5 and 6 permanent positions thereafter. So is there anything in the pipeline, and is creating something like this locally rather than in Tulare County an option?
So I'll speak to that, and then perhaps Katie can chime in as well. There is potential to build in Coachella Valley. One of the contract or one of the responses we received to the RFO was in fact a more local project, I think either in Riverside County or very close to it, that would have been a solar plus storage facility. The evaluation committee as a group, and I think, kind of individually, DCE staff, the community advisory members and T staff all chose to not bring that offer to the board due to some significant environmental concerns about the project. Can't tell you, whether it's continuing to be developed or not, but that particular project was one that we did not think met DCE standards for environmental concerns.
Katie, any other opportunities to do this locally instead of somewhere else?
Yes, I think as Jacqueline said, there are some that have been looked at in Riverside County, and I guess my thought would be seeing this project go forward and be successful kind of starts to lay the groundwork. And I think we will anticipate additional requests for offers, and it might be that we could focus our attention on, I'm not aware of any projects now, but it is a technology that Vesper is demonstrating in this project, and I think we could look to opportunities for that to occur, and you know, maybe work with CVEP and others to try to encourage that.
Well, okay, so, and just a brief comment on that, and then I've got one or two other quick questions. You know, solar energy is part of the strategy for diversifying and storage. It's part of the strategy for diversifying our economy. Work is being done by CVEP and other local government entities and so forth. And I see an opportunity here. We have a local company, and maybe there are others, that is kind of at the forefront of storage, Renova Energy, and Vince Battaglia is you know, rather forward thinking in that regard. We have you know, all sorts of solar facilities. We have land, we have sun. And I just wonder if that can be a project for CVAG, where we try and maybe CVEP and maybe Cal State, where we put all of those different parts of the puzzle together and create. I mean, I love the idea of creating solar energy, storing it, using it locally, creating local jobs. I mean, it's part of the mission of CCA and of DCE in particular. So I think I would want, as part of us moving forward with this, to task staff with starting to explore the possibilities of creating something like this locally and using some of the local partners and stakeholders and moving that ball forward. So indirectly, this is a really feeble question and I should know better. And I think I know the answer, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. We're creating this energy in Tulare County. We don't actually get the energy delivered here. So how does that work? Is there some kind of an exchange where we're still using some kind of solar energy, maybe stored or not? They're not sending it down here. So how do we, you know, as a CCA, how do we get that energy?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a great question. So you're right that, you know, the actual electrons that are generated at the solar and storage facility will likely not make its way into the houses of Palm Springs residents or DC customers. What will happen is the solar energy is generated. It either goes through the battery or not, or goes directly to the grid. And when I say the grid, what that means is the delivery point into the larger transmission grid that is controlled by the California Independent System Operator. At that point, we sell the energy into the broader CalISO's daily auction, where basically all energy that is produced by power plants is sold, and then all load that needs power, you know, buys. And then the auction clears. And so the revenue that's generated by that sale of the solar energy or the stored solar energy will then go towards paying for the DCE load.
Okay. And I know that question has been asked before and it'll probably be asked again. So I appreciate the explanation and the reminder. So essentially what we are doing from a climate standpoint is we're creating carbon-free energy. We may not be the direct physical beneficiaries, but somebody is, and we're doing our part in that regard. Okay.
Yeah.
And then final question, I promise. Why are we entering into a contract that doesn't commence for 2.5 years? Is that the normal course of things, or is it because Deer Creek needs to build this facility?
It's because Deer Creek needs to build it. So we were actually quite fortunate with the PPAs that DCE was previously able to sign with TerraGen, that the projects were either existing or nearing the end of completion. It's much more common to sign a project, and that gives the developer financial certainty that they can then go and develop the project. So Vesper has already been, you know, working and laying the groundwork to get the project built, has done a lot of work on the front end to get it to where it is now. Then it, you know, goes looking for load serving entities that are willing to sign a long-term contract. And then the next stage of actual finishing the permitting and constructing occurs.
Excellent, thank you so much. Appreciate your patience and your answers, thank you.
And thank you for those questions, comments. And if I had that picture, I could replace it for the windmills for today. So I had a solar storage, you know, so maybe next meeting. One thing, Sabi, which you raised, which I was going to raise also, was figuring out how we can start the process of, especially on these that are, you know, going to get built from scratch, of trying to encourage these in the valley, right? Because those construction jobs, we know from the windmill contracts, it's 180 construction jobs, and the 5 or 6 long-term jobs are just great and a real benefit of having the local entity. So maybe we bring that back as a discussion item and think about who else we might want to bring into it, whether someone from CVEP as well as CVAG, who we have as part of this. The other question I had is, since the CPUC is not letting us know ahead of time what will qualify, which is unfortunate, although it sounds like this should, what is plan B? If they say, actually, no, this doesn't count towards your long-term storage, because they have surprised us before.
Yeah, that's understandable. Perhaps we actually had a couple more slides, and I think one of those slides might answer your question, Jeff. Could the slide share get put back up? All right, thank you. All right, so yes, this is the first slide, second to last slide, which is how does this project help meet DCE's RPS requirements? So the bullet at the top refers to the long-term RPS requirement that occurs in compliance period 4, the current compliance period that we're in, as well as all future compliance periods. And then the chart below shows how DCE is meeting that compliance requirement. I'm not speaking to the broader RPS requirement, but just, you know, narrowing in on this long-term RPS requirement. So you can see without Deer Creek in the portfolio, DCE is about halfway towards its total need for long-term RPS. With Deer Creek in the portfolio, including the bridge product, we are very comfortably at almost 200% of the need. And I'll note that all of the excess need isn't just wasted dollars; it's money going towards the broader RPS need, as well as DCE's own higher clean energy goals. Don't feel like we're over procuring on that. It's all going to a valuable place. And then the last line in the table is with Deer Creek in the portfolio, but with excluding the bridge project. So this is under a scenario where the bridge product is not deemed compliant by the PUC. So as you can see, under our current load forecast, which is a best estimate, could change, particularly with potential load expansion, such as if Palm Desert were to join the load that is being served by DCE. But under the current load assumptions, you just squeak by with 101% of that total long-term requirement. So our intent over the coming 4 years of the compliance period will be to be speaking more directly with the CPUC staff. There's a number of touch points that we have annually as we submit compliance filings to the CPUC staff, saying, this is how we are planning on meeting our procurement requirement. Does this make sense to you? So the expectation is that over the next few years, we will get clarity from CPUC staff on whether the bridge product meets their requirements or not. Certainly by 2023, when Deer Creek actually does enter DCE's portfolio, we would hope to have that clarified. And if the bridge product does not meet the long-term compliance requirement needs, we'll still have that bridge product helping to meet the broader RPS compliance needs. So it'll still be valuable in DCE's portfolio. And we'll still have a year or two to go out and look for another long-term contract that could begin deliveries in 2023 or 2024. So that's sort of the fallback plan. I'm very hopeful that we don't get to there, but that's the hope.
Great, thank you, that really helps.
All right, and then we can just move on to the last slide there. As I've been trying to emphasize that, not only is this, a good contract for DCE's compliance needs, but it also is, very helpful for the overall DCE program goals. So you know, by signing a long-term PPA, we've locked in a significant portion of the energy costs from moving from sort of floating on the short-term market, which you know can be cheaper, but can often be more expensive by having a fixed price that we know we're going to be paying for a significant portion of DC's energy costs, which just helps us manage the risk of the program better. Next little bullet. There's also significant forecasted savings from the price of the PPA that DC will be paying versus what you would be paying if you were buying the same products on the short-term market. So this project with Deer Creek will bring energy into DC's portfolio, reducing the amount of hedging that DCE needs to do. It will bring RPS into DC's portfolio, reducing the amount of short-term RPS that you'll need to purchase. And it'll also bring resource adequacy into your portfolio, especially from that storage component. And that's a product that DC buys on the short-term market and has been going up significantly over the past few years. In looking at this project, TEA and DCE staff ran a number of different scenarios of what could be potential future outcomes in these different product pricing. Our estimate is that over the 20-year span of the project, it could, worst case, save DCE $13 million. And in other cases where, the prices of these short-term products increases significantly, or the cost of energy in California overall increases significantly, the savings could be closer to $15 million. So, really a valuable project just from a financial perspective alone. Next bullet. As I noted, I know that this isn't in Riverside County, but you are helping to build new renewables in Southern California. Especially getting in on the ground on this project, the DC is the one who's really allowing for the financing of this project to go forward and getting it built. Next bullet. As noted earlier, we're helping to build new energy storage. This is a technology type that the CPUC, as well as the California Independent System Operator, have indicated they really want to see more of on the grid. And energy storage is really the way that, at least with the current technologies that we have available, the storage is what allows for increased renewable penetration and integration into the grid. Storage is becoming important to California and will likely be more important. So it's really great to see DC doing its share of bringing in this technology type to the California grid. Next bullet. The energy storage component as well as the solar component lead to increased grid reliability and therefore, increased climate resilience as we help California reduce its carbon footprint overall as a state. Next bullet. There's kind of the prestige factor of contracting with what I would term an advanced renewable energy technology, right? It's not just your standard run-of-mill solar project that we've been building in California for the past 20 years, but the cutting edge area in terms of having a solar plus storage facility that we'll be optimizing to meet DCE's needs. And I think that was the last bullet. So this leads us to the last slide, which is the recommendation for resolution 2021-01. But again, glad to take any questions from those last few slides.
Great. Well, first, thank you so much again for the presentation. And I think coming in the heels of the three wind farms, just to see the amount of long-term savings that are being generated in these, four agreements and the work that you and staff and our advisory committee members did is really tremendous because we're gonna see the long-term benefits both for the environment and for ratepayers. So I just wanna thank you for that. And anyone have any questions, comments, or a motion?
I'll go ahead and move for approval of staff's recommendation.
Okay, motion. I can second it. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Yes. Great. Motion carries. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us, Mark. Sorry we didn't have anything for you. But you'll get us a picture.
All right. Thank you. Great.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, everyone. So our next item is item 6B, which is audited financial report, statement of auditing standards, 114 letter and report of internal cost controls for fiscal year 2019-2020. Do we have any public comments on this item? If there are, please raise your hand or hit star 9 if you're on your phone.
I don't see any raised hands.
Okay.
No comments on the audit.
Well, I'm sure we will from the board, at least one of us.
Yeah.
Expertise is in this area. So go ahead with the staff report, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, council members. Presented to you are the DCE's financial report, audit financial report for the fiscal year 2019. The statement on audit standards and the report on internal controls. This is the second year audit for DCE. The audit was performed by LSL, which is the same auditor that performed last year's audit. I have a quick summary of the financial statements. DCE's revenues were approximately $7.3 million. Coming from electricity sales to eligible customers in the city of Palm Springs during the last quarter of the fiscal year, which is when DCE started serving customers in the city of Palm Springs. The expenditures, DCE's expenditures was approximately $5.2 million, where the major expenditure was for the purchase of electricity of around $3.8 million. The consultant's expenditure was around $878,000, from which approximately $421,000 correspond to CVAC, to payments done to CVAC for the overhead, mostly overhead and shared services that we have based on the current service agreement. And finally, at the end of the fiscal year 2019-2020, DCE ended up with a net fund excess of $7.1 million, with cash and investments at the end of June of $4.4 million. Upon conclusion of the audit, the auditors did not detect any material weaknesses or deficiencies in the internal control. There were no material audit adjustments, and the auditors issued an unmodified or clean audit opinion. Attending this meeting is Mr. Ryan Domino, which is the manager with LSL, and he will briefly go over the audit and will address any questions that you may have, either for the auditors or for myself. Thank you.
Great, thank you so much. Mr. Domino.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the board. First of all, I want to apologize in advance. I am recovering from a little bit of a cold, so my voice is not quite there. And I also have two small children who just woke up from a nap, so if you hear anybody running around in the background, it's probably me. Anyway, so I'm happy to present the findings of the audit this year. It was overall a good year. And I'll start off by kind of talking about our responsibilities in the audit process. As Val previously mentioned, we were engaged to perform a financial audit. This is the second year that LSL has done the annual audit. And we also assisted in formatting and putting together the financial statements based on information provided by management. The whole point of the audit is to obtain reasonable assurance on the fair presentation of the financial statements in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So that means we didn't test every transaction because that wouldn't have a cost-benefit analysis to it, but we determined a materiality threshold, and we tested all transactions above that amount. We also obtained an understanding of internal controls over financial reporting We primarily did this last year, but we had to update our understanding based on the events and circumstances surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic, and also changes in staff during the previous fiscal year. Next slide, please. So like I previously mentioned, due to COVID-19, some things in our normal audit process got switched up. Normally we would conduct our audit in two phases. We would, during the fiscal year, typically before June 30th, we would actually be on site conducting interviews with staff, planning, identifying key internal controls, doing our risk assessment. And then we would come back out typically in November or late October to perform the final audit, where we dive into the numbers and substantiate the balances. Due to COVID-19, we didn't really have that opportunity this year. So we conducted our audit all at one time in a 2-week span. So the first week was spent primarily doing all of our review of internal controls. And then the second week, we really dove into the numbers. Along with our auditor's opinion letter, we issued two companion reports. One is the auditor communication letter. That's the SAS 114 letter. It's basically a written summary of this presentation. And then there is our SAS 115 report on internal control and compliance, where we would talk about any sort of audit findings or material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, if there were any. Next slide, please. So some of the highlights of the audit was due to COVID-19, we ran the entire audit remotely. So I want to really thank and appreciate staff for providing us all the data and stuff in electronic format. I know scanning documents is not fun and easy. So we appreciate all the time it took to get us that information. But in doing a completely remote audit, there are some special considerations that we had to factor in. Whenever you have electronic documents as the auditor, we have to make sure that those are, you know, can be relied upon. PDFs, as we all know, can be played with. We had no suspicions of that happening, so that was good. Everything we looked at appeared proper. And additionally, we had to review the internal controls specifically regarding approvals, making sure that the approval processes and policies that were in place were being adhered to, and that there was no circumvention of controls due to everyone working remotely. All this was done to render an opinion on the basic financial statements. So that's your statements and the footnotes that accompany it. That is all audited information. And we also provided or performed limited procedures to the required supplementary information. So that is the management's discussion and analysis. Management's discussion and analysis of the changes, that information is not necessarily audited, although we did agree it to the basic financial statements and made sure the numbers are consistent and reasonable and the explanations are reasonable in light of our audit. Next slide, please. Regarding the form and content of the financial statements, that is the sole responsibility of management. We just take the information that they give us and we put it into a nice, pretty PDF format that meets the GAAP standards. And at the end of the day, we issued an unmodified opinion, which is the best and highest opinion we can render on a financial statement. Basically means that these can be relied upon for decision-making purposes or for any other financial related purposes you need them for. Next slide. Our first companion letter is our report on internal control and compliance. This is a short little 2-page letter that would discuss deficiencies in internal control or material instances of non-compliance with laws, regulations, grant agreements that government auditing standards require us to look at. I'm very pleased to report that it's a clean letter. We did not have any deficiencies in internal control that we considered to be significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. And there were no instances of non-compliance. So everything looked really good from that end. Even in the remote work environment, the controls were still functioning properly. And with respect to the laws and regulations, we didn't come across anything that was out of compliance. Next slide, please. I'm just gonna kind of touch on this letter very briefly. Like I said before, it's just a written summary of the presentation I'm giving to you. It covers things such as accounting policies, uses of estimates, significant disclosures. If we had any difficulties during the audit, which we did not, any sort of uncorrected or corrected misstatements, again, we didn't have any. And then lastly, disagreements with management over the application of accounting principles, and we had no problems there. So that letter is pretty bland, very boring. I think the most interesting things in it are the upcoming GASBs in the back, but I'm sure I don't want to bore you too much going over those. Next slide. So in summary, we did a financial audit. It was a clean opinion, and we did not have any significant audit findings to report. So that is my presentation. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to present, and I'm more than happy to take any questions you have at this time. I'm sorry, I think you're muted.
Should I just jump in, Jeff? Is that okay?
Yes, please, I'm unmuted.
Okay, sorry. So Ryan, thanks a lot. I feel like I've been seeing a lot of you lately. Between all your different reports. So I do hope that cold gets better.
Thank you.
And by the way, I'll say that we've grown accustomed at CVAG and now DCE to getting these clean reports, but they are not to be undervalued and underappreciated. That's very comforting to know that, you know, we've passed muster and we're doing the right things financially. So thank you for your hard work. I wouldn't do auditing if you paid me 10 times your billing rate, by the way. Couple of just quick questions. I'm just curious, and some of these are a little bit, you know, in the weeds, so you may have to get back to us, but on the accounts receivable, I noticed there's about 4.5 million of ARs there. I assume those are, you know, rate payer receivables, that billings that have gone out that have not been received in cash. And I'm just wondering what rate you're using for the allowance for doubtful accounts. Not that you're using, I guess DCE is using, as presented on this statement. And I know this is a 20,000 foot view financial statement. Sure. So if you don't have that immediately at your disposal, I wonder if that can be emailed to us.
I think this is a question for Val. I think he's got it.
I have the rate we use was 0.3% over the total revenues, and that's based on the policy that we have.
Okay, so policy, do you happen to know off the top of your head if that's standard industry practice?
Well, yeah, it's around 0.3 to 0.5, not on COVID times. That's something that I like to point out, yeah.
I understand that, and really I wanted to know under normal circumstances, is that a reasonable rate? And I'm hearing yes, it's consistent with the industry. Under the liabilities, we see due to other governments, 531,000. What is that?
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay. I can answer it. It's primarily broken up into two different categories. A lot of it is related party payables to CBAG. That's probably about half of it. And then the other half is utility users taxes and electric energy surcharges that are collected and then remitted to the ultimate collector of those taxes. So they're not representative, I believe, of revenues or expenses to DCE.
Okay, understood. The portion to CVAG, let's slow pay that as much as possible. They're not in a hurry. I'm just kidding. So my final question, I'm just curious again, under operating revenues, we see miscellaneous of 230,000, which pales in comparison to 7.2, but it's still, you know, $250,000. So what's the miscellaneous revenue?
That information, I would have to go back through my records. I don't have that in front of me, but I can get back to you on that. Unless Val, you have it in front of you, maybe.
Those are market charges for it's market transactions, specifically the congestion revenue rights, which are financial instruments related to hedging. That
related to what?
Hedging.
Okay. So yeah. It is a part of the process of obtaining the energy? I mean, it's part of what DC does. It's not something unrelated.
Yeah, actually, these are auction results that we receive on a monthly basis, which are non-representative if you compare it with procurement costs.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That exhausts my my tail of questions, Jeff. Thank you.
That's pretty good. Councilor Lamb, any questions or comments?
I have no questions. Thank you. Great presentation.
Yeah, well, big thank you to LSL and thank you to staff for all the work and doing this under more trying conditions with COVID is appreciated.
You're very welcome.
Do we need a motion to receive and file or just receiving and filing? I think, right? Katie, it's just a receive and file, right?
Second.
Do we need to accept this, Katie, or?
I'm sorry. It could just be as a receive and file.
Okay. That's fine. Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Our next item, that's okay, is C, update on DC program activities. Do we have any public comment? Again, please raise your hand or hit star 9.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the of DCE. I wanted to start by highlighting the way we spent February 9th a few weeks ago, and I want to appreciate the participation of you board members who were able to join us on our COVID friendly and very carefully planned signing ceremony. May I have the first slide, please? We just wanted to highlight that we were out on February 9th at the TerraGen facility. This is the new construction that was approved by the board in December. And we were fortunate that the turbines were very close to being completed. And so we were able to have a signing ceremony with TerraGen and DCE at the foot of one of these 500 foot high turbines. This is right out in the city of Palm Springs, just west of Indian Canyon and south of the freeway. And you can see that there are workers in progress doing the work on that project. So both the permanent and temporary jobs that were identified are filled, and our folks are working on those projects, which is exciting. Next slide, please. Mr. Chair, you did a great job of highlighting the opportunity, and we had a ceremonial signing with Mayor Holstegy and Mayor Pro Tem Middleton from the city of Palm Springs. And Ms. Councilmember Jonathan, I believe we're just finding you hiding behind the mayor of Palm Springs, but thank you for being there. And Tom Kirk was also present. He's hiding behind the podium. But it was a really great morning. It was chilly. The wind was blowing appropriately. And if we could have the last slide, please. This was a really nice view from the team. This is Craig Pospolis from TerraGen, who joined us as well. And I wanted to also note that Councilmember Jonathan has a nice background, as does Chair Kors, recognizing the wind energy being generated for renewable resources here in the Coachella Valley. So that's was a great day, and we really are excited to have that project in Palm Springs. And as has been discussed earlier, we definitely want to work towards more projects of this kind. So with that, I just want to briefly update you on some of the items that were included in your staff report. As we continue, the participation rate for customers from Palm Springs in the carbon-free is still at about 83%. It's changed very little in that time, and that is the equivalent, as the mayor has noted in his presentations at city councils and elsewhere, 15,000 cars off the road. Power purchase agreements are highlighted in your staff report, the one that was approved in December, and of course, this one now just today. We are making some updates to the website to try to provide more help for customers with tips on reducing energy. We have some new information that we're putting together, and also highlighting programs that are available from Southern California Edison and others that will help them, especially as we start to move into the warmer months. I also wanted to note, as one of the items in your staff report, we are looking at ways that we can help customers. Councilmember Jonathan, as you just touched on, the number of customers who are having difficulty paying their bills, and the delinquency rate is higher than expected given the COVID situation. And we are looking at some of the programs that other CCAs are considering, as well as options that we might take a look at that may help those customers while still making a value proposition for DCE. So that's something we anticipate bringing back to you as we explore the opportunities. There is a program that Southern California Edison has that you approved participation in, which also gives customers the ability to have some relief. So that's something we're kind of wanting to pay attention to, providing information on resources that can help those folks, but also see if there's anything we can do to help recover some of the losses that we see and help customers at the same time. We do have a meeting of the Community Advisory Committee. Actually, the date in your agenda is a mistake on my part. That meeting is February 24th, tomorrow. I do want to mention that you all do receive the emails about those meetings, and we're happy to see that happening. We're working with the CAC, the Community Advisory, on programs, and I think we'll also talk to them about some of the things that were discussed today with regard to local power. The staff report also includes a summary of our participation rates and opt-outs, which is there for your information, and that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you and staff for your work on that press event and the ceremonial contract signing. It was really great to be out there and great to see sort of one of the our reasons for launching DCE was to have those local jobs and local control and to see that moving forward. Really appreciate all the customers in Palm Springs who are doing 100% carbon free and the impact that's making. But even the small percentage who have chosen the Desert Saver rate in 8 months saved over approximately $200,000 than if they stayed with Edison. And it still is the cheapest electricity someone can buy from any provider in Palm Springs. So really a real benefit both for those who are choosing the 100% carbon free and those who for whatever reason and financial reasons are choosing Desert Saver, we're saving them money over any other option they could have. So it's really good to see that happening with this organization. Those are all things we wanted to see, all of them, and we currently are. So that's really good news. So thank you for sharing that. Any comments or questions? Anyone else?
I would just add that out of the thousands of pictures that were taken that day, I know it's Tom Kirk that picked the one that I was completely not visible in. So thank you for that, Tom Kirk. But on a serious note, I once again commend the city of Palm Springs for opting in. And my favorite statistic from all of that is 15,000 cars off the road is the equivalent of what those that opted into the carbon-free option have done in the partial year of 2020. I don't know how hard we have to work to do something like that, but that is so impactful that I once again commend the city of Palm Springs and its residents for doing that.
Great, thank you. Any other comments? Not, we will move to the information items, which are attendance record, the unaudited financial report for July 1st to December 31st of 2020, the update on grid alternative single family affordable home program, and the regional energy network update. I do believe we had at least one public comment on the information items. David Friedman had a comment on one of those. There he is. You're on, David.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great, all right, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Kors. As mentioned, I'd like to comment on the Inland Regional Energy Network Business Plan, including in your agenda packet under item 7D. I was pleased to see the Energy Code training sessions that CVAG co-sponsored with Palm Springs Sustainability Commission, noted as an example of what IREN can do in workforce education and training. Based on the work I'm currently doing at the Sustainability Commission, I can also attest to the need for technical assistance to local governments to improve energy efficiency in public buildings, foster energy code compliance, and develop a model REACH code for a climate zone that focuses on the substantial energy and cost savings that energy efficient upgrades to existing homes would produce. And in fact, the REACH codes team just released a new cost effectiveness study on that I'll be analyzing. Having attended various BayREN training sessions on these topics previously in person in San Francisco and now virtually, I look forward to these resources being available in our own region. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Do we have any other public comment? No? Okay. either of our members have any comments or questions on the information items?
I have a very quick question, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Sorry, on item 7B, the unaudited financial statements, I don't know why, but it came to my attention for the first time that we're using River City Bank for all our accounts. And I just wonder if staff can look into whether or not local banking would be an option. I know there's some unique requirements and most banks are not suited for processing, but we also have a money market account and other accounts. And I just wonder if that's even an option, if staff can look into that.
Yes, we can look into that. We did do a request for proposals for the banking partner several years back, but I think it's a good time for us to take a look at opportunities to work with local banks. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so next is public comment on non-agenda items. So this is the time for any member of the public to address the committee on items that are not on our agenda, but within the purview of this body.
Mr. Chair, we have Jennifer Cusack from Southern California Edison. Jennifer?
Great, hi Jennifer,
welcome. Can we promote? Jennifer, you need
Hello.
To, oh, there you go. Need to unmute and you can put your video on if you'd like.
I thought my video is on. I don't know how to switch to video. Mm-hmm. I don't see it here.
You're back muted. There you are.
There you go.
You're muted though. We can see you, but we can't hear you now.
Now you're on mute.
Now I can unmute myself. Thank you very much. And it's good to see you all. Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Kors, Vice Chair Jonathan, and Board Member Lamb, DCE staff, and members of the public. I appreciate the opportunity to speak briefly today. My name is Jennifer Cusack, Government Relations Manager for Southern California Edison. I've been asked to address the board to deliver a copy of a letter from SCE dated 2/23/2021 today and ask that it be entered into public record. The letter explains the agreement between DCE and SCE that was negotiated and executed in good faith. It is important that DCE honor this commitment as made as part of this agreement and submit payment in full. And that is all, and thank you. And of course, any questions, I'm always available for any one of you. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Do we have any other public comment on non-agenda items? Let's see. Nothing there.
No other.
Okay, so next is announcements, and our next DC meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 15th, 2021 at 2:30 p.m. And we will adjourn the meeting into closed session. And for board members, we all have a link in our email for the closed session.
Thank you,
everyone Mr. who participated.
We will recess out of this meeting to closed session. And you, as Chair Kaur said, you should all have received an email for board members for the closed session.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Hi, is the public meeting still rolling?
Yeah. It is, thank you.
Thank you, this is Ryan Barron, legal counsel for Desert Community Energy. That concluded the closed session of the board of directors. At this time, I would like to report out that there was no reportable action taken by the board. And with that, we would conclude and adjourn today's meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.